From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The following are true ghost stories from around the world. From Germany, the poltergeist that telephoned. During the summer months of 1967, a German attorney named Sigmund Adam was completely baffled by strange going on in his law office in Rosenheim, just south of Munich. Adam had four telephones in his place of business, but usually only one or two of them were in use at the same time. The remaining two he had installed just in case more calls came in when his workload became heavier than normal. When the abnormal telephone activity began, all four phones would sometimes jangle simultaneously. Secretaries and lawyers called in for consultation went crazy trying to answer all the calls. Often the calls got cut off in the middle of conversations. Furthermore, the phone bills Adam received were obviously far too high for the number of calls that had actually been placed from his law office. Other mysterious irregularities also began to occur. Although there seemed to be no overload on the electrical current, fuses would suddenly blow, light bulbs overheated and burned out. Large fluorescent fixtures recessed in the ceiling winked out as if a hidden hand had unscrewed them by a fraction of a turn. Excess amounts of developing fluid were discovered to have been poured into the photocopying equipment. Speculating that there might be irregularities in the electrical supply delivered to his office, Herr Adam got in touch with both the telephone company and the maintenance department of the Rosenheim power station. Technicians were called to investigate the strange calls and the electric power disturbances. A sophisticated voltmeter was hooked up to monitor variations in the power supply, and a telephone counter was installed to automatically tabulate the exact time of outgoing calls, as well as to record the number and duration of incoming calls. For the next several weeks, the telephone counter recorded repeated calls to the number 0119. This was the phone company's number, giving the correct time of day. Moreover, the automatic counting mechanism revealed that these outgoing calls were made as frequently as 5 or 6 times a minute. Yet everyone in the office denied dialing this number. On the voltmeter recorder, a number of big power surges were registered that no one could account for. But Herr Adam and others noticed that these surges often coincided with times when unusual phenomena were happening in the law offices. By early winter, the strange case began to receive publicity in the German press. Both the West German and Bavarian television networks decided to try to document what was going on, and soon their cameras were set up in the Rosenheim law offices. Not only did the cameras record the installation of the electrical monitoring apparatus, but they also filmed interviews with Herr Adam, his employees, and a number of the technicians. One of the latter insisted that the automatic counter had not been lying. The repeated calls to the number 0119 must have been made from the law offices. Nevertheless, Herr Adam's employees denied making any such calls. Subsequently, these documentaries were widely televised throughout Germany. Ultimately, the publicity roused the interest of the eminent psychologist and psychic investigator, Dr. Hans Bender, of the University of Freiburg. Bender was also chief of the Institute for Border Areas that had already investigated some 30 similar cases of paranormal activity. Early in December, the Institute commenced its own probe of the Rosenheim occurrences. Also requested to participate in the investigation was the well-known Max Planck Institute for Plasma Physics in Munich. Two physicists from this institute came to check out the voltmeter recorder information and any normal physical phenomena that might have caused the strange events. Bender and his associates from Freiburg quickly established some fundamental observations. First, the phenomena took place only during office hours. These phenomena, the mysterious phone calls that nobody seemed to be making, the fuses and light bulbs burning out for no apparent reason, were of a kind known to parapsychologists as psychokinesis, or PK for short. PK is defined as a direct influence exerted over a physical system by a person without any known intermediate physical energy or instrumentation. Popularly, it is known as mind over matter. Second, it did not take the Bender team long to establish that the PK, or poltergeist activity, was centering about one of her Adam's employees, a 19-year-old girl named Anne-Marie Charbel. Indeed, the paranormal events usually started when Anne-Marie arrived at the law offices. When the girl came through the entryway, the lamps hanging above her from the ceiling often started swinging. So regularly did this occur that the Bender team was able to photograph the lights in motion. The team also noticed that the odd events usually happened close to where Anne-Marie was working or standing. They were less frequent at a distance from her. What was more, when a light bulb exploded, regardless of where it was located, the glass shards always flew toward Anne-Marie. When the investigators had made a thorough examination of the voltmeter recorder data, they concluded that the power surges were typical of irregular short-duration forces. Yet the phenomena were highly complex and not really like pure electrical behavior. Moreover, there appeared to be something in the recurring patterns that suggested intelligence and evasiveness. As the poltergeist events continued, the workers in the law offices became rather accustomed to them. Sometimes they would joke about what odd thing would occur next. Anne-Marie herself would often foretell when something was about to happen. Once she cried out, "Oh, I have a feeling that the light bulb in the next room is going to explode." In a couple of minutes, it did. Concerned as he was, her Adam could see the humor in the whole situation. "The next thing you know," he joked to Anne-Marie, "the pictures on the walls will start turning around." This was on a Friday afternoon. On entering the office next Monday morning, her Adam saw some large oil paintings begin to rotate on their wall hangings. Bender's team of investigators were able to photograph one of them as it swung through nearly half a circle. Meanwhile, the strange PK events multiplied. A heavy filing cabinet, weighing several hundred pounds, twice shifted itself out about a foot from the wall. That Anne-Marie could have accomplished this seemed scarcely possible, for she herself weighed only about 100 pounds. Legal briefs and other documents were mysteriously moved from one location to another without anyone having handled them. Desk drawers slid open all by themselves. One day, as Anne-Marie stood under a heavy chandelier, the fixture began to swing so violently that it dented the ceiling. As the events continued, the strain began to tell on the girl. She complained of strange spasms in her legs and arms. Her Adam sent her on a leave of absence, and while she was gone, the poltergeist activity ceased completely. In time, Anne-Marie took a job in another office in town. Dr. Bender, however, was still much interested in the case. As with so many instances of poltergeist activity, the events had centered about a teenager. In interviewing Anne-Marie, he learned that she was unhappy and frustrated in her job. The work was tedious and boring, and each day she could hardly wait until it was time to go home. Significantly enough, the equipment that had tabulated the calls to 0119 revealed that they had been counted most frequently toward closing time at Anne-Marie's office. There was never any proof that she or any of the other employees had dialed that number or had perpetrated any of the events as a joke. But apparently, Anne-Marie's frustration and restlessness on the job had somehow released sufficient psychokinetic energy to activate the weird events in her Adam's law offices, the place where she had felt most discontented. Subsequently, the young woman cooperated in laboratory tests in PK and ESP at the Institute for Border Areas in Freiburg. Oddly, she was unsuccessful in demonstrating PK ability, even when tested with the same kind of voltmeter recorder that had been used in her Adam's offices. Moreover, on ESP tests, she did not score much higher than chance would permit. The range of PK and poltergeist activity that occurred in Rosenheim was astonishingly wide, and the case remains one of the most thoroughly documented in modern times. Permanent records still are preserved of the TV films, photographs, and videotapes taken by the networks and Dr. Bender's team of investigators, as are the tabulated records of the voltage and telephone apparatus. although the causes of the PK's activity are only partly comprehended. The Rosenheim case stands as one of the very few in which poltergeist phenomena activated a system of telephones. India. The poltergeist of Bombay Province. Many psychic investigators have been interested in the poltergeist that manifested itself in a small city just south of Bombay in India. Among them were the Englishman Harry Price and Father Herbert Thurston, a Jesuit priest who spent much of his life probing poltergeist phenomena. The full details of the disturbances, which lasted for several years, were officially published in the British Journal for Psychic Research. While most poltergeist cases seemed associated with restless or upset teenagers, these events centered around an 8-year-old boy named Damodar Bapat, an orphan. The boy's mother, who had been bothered by odd visions, had taken her own life. Damodar's father, a high caste Brahmin, had died shortly after the boy's birth in 1920. Dr. S. V. Ketkar, another Brahmin gentleman, and his German wife, adopted Damodar shortly after his father's death. The Ketkars were highly respected citizens and intellectuals. When the disturbances began in their home during the mid-1920s, a physician friend, Dr. J. D. Jenkins, reported that the couple started to suffer terribly, both in name and estate and in all their affairs. Because of the upsetting poltergeist disturbances, the Ketkars' health began to fail, and they found that servants would seldom remain long in the troubled house. At length, Dr. Jenkins, at the urging of the Ketkars, agreed to come into their home to give his professional opinion of the queer happenings, which included objects being flung about, things appearing out of nowhere, and of personal property suddenly being smashed as if by an unseen and malevolent hand. After moving into the house, Dr. Jenkins interviewed various eyewitnesses who had been present when the annoyances occurred. It did not take the doctor long to find out that they nearly always happened when young Damodar was about. In order to observe and study the boy for a while, Jenkins isolated Damodar in one of the rooms of the Ketkar's residence. The physician put the youth completely naked on a small bed, took his pulse, and instructed him to just lie there quietly. Jenkins then closed the door and the windows, draped a sheet over Damodar, and sat down in a far corner of the room to see if anything unnatural would happen. The doctor did not have long to wait. After a few minutes, the doctor was amazed to witness the sheet jerked off the lad and the bed move into the center of the room all by itself. At this point, Damodar was elevated off the bed and deposited gently on the floor. Later, the boy told the doctor that he could actually feel the arms of some invisible being lifting him. Next, the perplexed Jenkins observed a bottle of ink on a nearby desk leave its resting place and come sailing through the air directly at him. Luckily, it narrowly missed his head. This was followed by a barrage of Damodar's toys being thrown about the room. The doctor told the parents about these odd events. It was his opinion that they could not be attributed to pranks by the boy or any other physical causes. The next day, Dr. Jenkins came to the Ketkar's house with some skeptical friends. One was a policeman, and another was, in Jenkins' own words, an irascible old major who had settled the whole problem by the simple process of calling me a liar when I related to him the happenings of the day before. That afternoon, the doctor saw some more of the unaccountable phenomena. Once, as everyone was chatting on the veranda, a small table, untouched by anyone, came hobbling across the floor. It headed directly for the major, imprisoning him temporarily in his armchair. At dinner that same evening, other strange things started to occur. A salt cellar began to dance crazily about the table. The major's glass fell over all by itself. Next, the whole table was cleared by unseen hands. This was too much for the major. He muttered, "Good night," and left the table. Dr. Jenkins recorded these and dozens of other odd events in a diary that he kept during his investigation for the Ketkars. Most of these events were later published. During the early months of 1928, Dr. Ketkar's sister-in-law, Miss H. Kahn, was living with a family and she too recorded some of the odd disturbances. This young woman was a teacher of European languages at Bombay University, and her notes, which she sent to Father Thurston in England, covered a period of 11 months. "I took especial care," she wrote to Thurston, "to avoid the slightest exaggeration or inaccuracy, and the events were always recorded immediately after their occurrence." Miss Kahn also said that many people suspected Damodar of producing the disturbances, but the more she observed the events, the more she became convinced that the boy was quite innocent of participating in them in any way. One Sunday in July 1928, Miss Kahn was standing in her bedroom talking with Damodar when a small glass of water, a vegetable extract, was hurled into the room. The jar had been standing in the dining room with some others in a closed cupboard. In order for the jar to have reached the bedroom, where forth was smashed to pieces, it had had to turn a corner. The boy could not possibly have hurled it himself. Curiously, this poltergeist seemed to have a deep aversion to ink. Nearly every ink container in the Khetkar household was either smashed or spilled. Once Miss Kahn was having dinner with the Khetkars in their dining room. Damodar was also present, but he happened to step into one of the bedrooms for a few seconds. At that moment, a screw-top jar of ink that Dr. Khetkar had managed to keep safely until then came sailing through the dining room and into the bedroom where the boy was standing. There it broke, spilling the ink onto the floor. Incredibly, this missile had been transported all the way from Dr. Khetkar's study in the extreme front of the house. Another time, a visitor had called to see Dr. Khetkar. As Miss Kahn was fetching a pad and pencil that he had asked for, an aspirin bottle from a shelf in the dining room was suddenly hurled in her direction by, as she later wrote, an invisible hand. The bottle flew at her with such excellent aim that she screamed with terror. Yet when it reached her, it merely fell at her feet without breaking. All the while, Damodar was standing quietly near her. As time went by, Dr. Khetkar and his family grew more depressed about the weird happenings in their house. They were careful not to publicize them, for they felt this would only bring more trouble from suspicious and alarmed neighbors. Their greatest hope was to find some way to bring the violent events to an end. So damaging had their unseen intruder grown that sometimes the family could not be sure they had enough food on hand for the next meal. The poltergeist evidently disliked eggs as well as ink. Once Mrs. Khetkar brought home 4 dozen eggs and put them away in a large basket in the dining room cupboard. No sooner had she done so than an egg from the direction of the closed cupboard flew towards the two women and smashed on the floor. They took the basket out of the cupboard and counted the eggs. One was missing. Miss Kahn cleaned up the mess, but immediately another egg shot toward them from the opposite direction, that is, not from the direction of the cupboard. Again the eggs were counted, and a second egg was now missing. Both women had been watching Damodar during this event, but not once had the boy come near the cupboard. On another occasion, Mrs. Khetkar noticed that a heavy lock on a cupboard in her room was hanging open only minutes before she had locked it herself. She had chosen to inspect this lock for a very good reason. As she had crossed the dining room only a minute or two before, a large empty basket was flung at her head from above. This basket was the same one that she had locked away in the cupboard in her room. Sometimes the poltergeist could be as humorous as it was annoying. One morning, Miss Kahn was planning to go out, but first decided that her shoes needed polishing. However, she was unable to locate the shoe polish, which was missing from its usual place on a shelf. Irritated, she questioned every member of the household, but everyone denied having seen it. Deciding to go without polishing her shoes, she was in the act of putting on her hat when she was startled by a sudden thud. It was the missing can of polish, which apparently had come from some point in midair and landed right at her feet. Again, the boy was present in the room, but from where she was sitting, he could not have anything to do with the event. The next morning, exactly the same thing happened. The shoe polish was missing. This time, Miss Kahn simply called out, "Shoe polish, please." The can came to her in the same gentle manner as before. The poltergeist also appeared to enjoy making off with money. Bills were even taken from locked receptacles. Sometimes the money was never recovered. At another time, the exact amount would be returned, but in small change. On several occasions in broad daylight, wrote Miss Kahn, we saw coins fall among us from above. This was always while the boy was in the house. At first, we could not always see the coins in midair, but merely saw them fall. Soon, however, we actually saw the money appear in the air. In some cases, these seemed to be coins which were missing from our purses. In other cases, we could not account for the coins. In every instance, it was most obvious that the boy himself was not doing the mischief. One day, Miss Kahn left her handbag containing a change purse in the dining room. In the purse were 2 rupees. Returning for it later, she located the bag, but the purse was missing from it. Again, the resourceful Miss Kahn demanded her property. Purse, please, whereupon the purse fell gently at her feet. The 2 rupees, however, were not in it, nor were they ever returned. This Indian poltergeist evidently objected as strongly as its brother ghost to the rite of exorcism. Once a priest came to say a mantra, and immediately a large china cup was smashed to pieces in the dining room. But finally, and mercifully, the intruder, tired of causing havoc in the household, and seemed to lose his psychic force. In the later months of 1930, the disturbances subsided, and peace returned once more to the Ketkar family.